Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Peter McCombie. How are you, Peter?
I'm very well today.
Excellent. You're a master of wine and one of the judges at the Cellars in the Sky.
Yep, that's right.
And we're going to be talking today about drinking wine, but drinking wine on airplanes and judging at the Cellars in the Sky and how things all pan out.
Yep.
Let's start off with a wee bit about the Cellars in the Sky. The listeners have already heard Tom Otley, the editor, talk about Cellars in the Sky as a competition for airlines. But you're one of the judges. So do you want to just give us a judge's point of view of Cellars in the Sky?
Yeah, there's a small panel. There's usually four of us, and we do it over 2 days. And occasionally, one judge can only do 1 day. So maybe some years there's five of us overall. And the airlines get to submit two white wines from business class, two white wines from first class, two reds from each class, one champagne or fizz from each class, and a sweet or fortified wine. And then we judge them in classes. So we're not judging the whole wine list. We're actually looking at what they submit. We do it blind and we do it in pairs. And so what we'll do is, say, take business class white. There'll usually be two flights. Two of us will go through the odd-numbered wines, the other two will go through the even-numbered wines, and then we'll each pair will pull forward our favourite wines, and then we'll swap over and we'll look at the other pair's favourite wines, and sometimes we might end up pushing something back, and then we'll taste them again and we'll discuss them, and then we come up with our top wines. And so at the end of the process, the magazine, it will actually aggregate the scores, and so every wine that gets judged has a score. So you'll find that you have the best business class white, and you'll have a gold, if you like. There's a silver and a bronze. You can have the best seller in business class, the best seller in first class, and then overall there'll be who's got the best wine is based on all of the scores. So sometimes an airline may not win a class, but they've got very good scores overall, and so they might be the best seller in the sky.
Yeah, okay. This judging, the most recent judging, I think they had about 250 wines. So you're not over 2 days. So you're not tasting 250 wines over 2 days.
No.
I was going to say, because when
that's
I judge, I'm my ability after I start to feel that it's no good after about 70 or 80 wines. And at IWC, you normally taste 100 wines in a day.
Yeah.
And that's quite, on the first round.
Yeah.
And that's fine on the first round. But when you're looking for medals, you want to be a little bit more focused on just the best.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. One is, inevitably, there is a kind of palate fatigue. But I think as much as physical, it's mental.
Yeah.
And I believe that to judge wine, you have to have a very healthy ego. You have to say, I think this is good. I think this is a gold medal, or I think it's worth a score. But like the International Wine Challenge, with Cellars in the Sky, we judge collegiately. So as well as your healthy ego, you have to have enough humility sometimes to pull your horns in and realize that either you're wrong or that nobody else agrees with you. And I think that's great. I don't have any problem with that. So I think, and as part of that, I think as a judge, I certainly am happy to admit I have moments of self-doubt where I think, what am I doing? Do I really know what I'm talking about? And I think that's really healthy. I think it's because if you just carry on smugly assuming that everything you do is right, then I think there lies madness. I think you end up genuinely making mistakes because you're too full of yourself. So
yeah.
I think for me that those moments of doubt are very healthy. And so to sometimes that's sort of associated, maybe, just after lunch, like in your working life, lots of us have a dip after lunch. It's just, there's a concentration thing, I think, after eating. And if you've ever been in a sales meeting, you'll know what that's like.
Yeah.
And I think maybe...
Or running a WSD Level 3 course after lunch.
Exactly. And all the students are kind of drifting away.
Yeah.
So I think maybe that's a time when, as much as the amount of wine you've had, it's just maybe there's times in the day. And what I've learned to do is just to realize that I'm having a moment, and you just stop and you sort of regroup, and maybe you have a cracker, or maybe you check your phone and look at your Twitter feed or something. You just sort of take a moment and stop. And because if you keep obsessing, I don't think you get anywhere. You have to kind of break your thought process somehow. And you come back to it. And I think, and to be honest, without trying to sound smug, the more you do it, I think the better you get at handling a good number of wines. The truth is, when I do wine tastings with consumers, you get to 8 wines and people have had enough.
You know, but they drink.
But they'll drink. Yeah. But they'll say, I can't tell anymore. You know, they all taste good to me or something like that. And the thing is, that's entirely reasonable. You know, they're not meant to be taking it seriously, whereas that's my job. And so focus and concentration is something you have to keep working on, I suppose.
Okay. One of the things about airplanes is that they are quite a different environment to...
Yes.
Your kitchen here, for example.
So they're drier. There's much less humidity in the air. There is less air pressure, and they can be noisy. You know, you get that sort of low thrum, that low hum. And maybe we're not so sure how that noise works, but it's pretty likely it has some kind of effect on you. There's been a little bit of research done on the influence of humidity in the air and air pressure. And so what we know is that the dry air means your mucus and so on starts to dry up, and so you're less sensitive.
Less sensitive to aromas.
Yes. And so combined with that, with the low pressure, wines tend to be more volatile, so they lose aromas.
Okay, so the lower the pressure, the flavour can boil out because it's not being held in by the pressure so much.
So what that all comes together to suggest is that fruity, aromatic wines work better because you smell them, and you're probably looking for less structure, softer wines, maybe lower tannins, maybe slightly lower acidity. That comes up against business class and first class. People are expecting serious wines, particularly in first class. They think, well, I've paid all this money for a ticket, so I should be having class growth claret. And I would argue that most of the time, class growth claret is the last wine you want at 10,000 metres in an aluminium tube.
Because
it will have tannins and it will have acidity.
And lots of both.
And maybe, you know, good claret can have subtlety, and maybe you actually lose the subtlety. You don't really get the complexity and the subtlety, and the tannins and acidity taste harder. So I actually think if you like class growth claret, you should drink it on the ground, you know, around a dinner table, in a restaurant, whatever, in a circumstance where it tastes better to you.
But then you've got this whole thing of people's expectation.
Exactly.
So therefore, there's almost a pressure for them to show wines that they may not think are the best wines.
Well, indeed. Well, this year, in fact, in the judging, we had in the first class red, I think it was, we had 2 clarets. And I think the secret was they weren't from great vintages. They were from good vintages, but they weren't great vintages. So, and I think the airlines had done a good job of selecting wines that were a bit more approachable.
Is that because not great vintage, so they haven't extracted as much tannins, and therefore they've made a more fruit-forward style of wine?
Yeah, and they're not trying to work, you know, they're not trying to get everything out of the grapes. So, there's an argument sometimes in some areas that even bad vintage, you can make decent wine if you're a good winemaker. You know, if you don't try and overwork the fruit, and you know you select and you reject some things, and I think that's true. I think people get hung up with vintage charts. They think, oh, I can only buy 2009 Bordeaux, when in fact there are plenty of vintages. You know, you'd have to go back a long way. Maybe 84 was a terrible vintage in Bordeaux, and the wines were pretty terrible mostly. But if you had a vintage like that now, I think most people, certainly at the top level, would have a workaround. You know, they'd make less wine, they'd select the fruit, and they wouldn't extract it so hard. So you could still make a good drinkable wine.
Yeah. So if tannins and acidity are a problem, you could perhaps use older wines, because as our wines age, they tend to lose acidity, they tend to lose tannins. So that might be one way of getting a top end branded wine in first class that people are aware of.
Yeah. The question then is availability. You know, the truth is that, you know, they at the top end, people don't have huge volumes mostly. There are some exceptions, but they generally don't have huge volumes. In particular with age, there's a cost to aging. You know, every airline has a budget, so they don't have an unlimited budget for wine. So if you've got a wine that you've kept for 5 years, you want some payback for that. You know, it should cost more than the wine if it's just released. So I think that's a little bit of a dilemma for the airlines. And then, you know, I know, for example, say, BA do something quite clever. They will put some wines on certain routes that have a link. So, for example, if you're going to Johannesburg, there'll be a couple of South African wines on the list. If you're flying to the States, you know, you'll have a couple of American wines. And so that means they could work with smaller quantities rather than having the same wine on every flight.
Oh, okay.
Which, when you are a big airline, it starts to get a bit difficult. So, that, you know, that's one way around it.
Yeah, okay.
And I suppose the other thing is trying to find wines that you think have the right style and taste profile, but maybe are beginning to have a bit of reputation and glamour. So, you know, this year, I think it was in Business Class Red this year, we had, you know, the top wines were all made from Shiraz or Syrah. So we had Hazel Grove, McLaren Vale Shiraz from South Australia. We had another McLaren Vale came in third, and in silver, there was Crows Hermitage from Chablais.
Okay.
Which actually surprised me somewhat.
Crows Hermitage isn't exactly... it's not in Northern Rhone, it's not the best region.
No, but actually, it is... Good Crows actually has an accessibility about it.
Yeah,
Chablais is a good name. You know, it's gone through a little bit of a reinvention and change of ownership and so on. And I can imagine that. Well, obviously we gave it a silver, but it would have been quite fleshy. I think, you know.
Yeah.
I think not so tannic.
Yeah.
And in fact, none of those wines are going to be super tannic. So I think that's really how they came out ahead. And we're not looking to say, oh yes, we need Australian Shiraz. I actually try quite hard not to try and identify wines when I'm judging. I just want to say, is this good?
Yeah.
Occasionally, oh, I think I might know what this is. But actually, I think it's risky trying to do that. Because if you really get specific, you can either overcompensate or undercompensate. You think, oh, if that's that, it should be better. Or maybe you go... Oh, I think I know who made that. Oh, they're really nice. Maybe I'll give them an extra point.
Yeah, yeah.
Best not to.
Don't even think about it.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's funny because there are categories, like, for example, not just because I'm a Kiwi, but I think New Zealand Pinot Noir is a really good red wine in the sky, and not much came through this year.
Yeah, well, now, Air New Zealand didn't enter, so...
That's true, but no, usually there'll be airlines, maybe some of the... Middle Eastern airlines will have a New Zealand Pinot, a lot of them will have a Sauvignon, particularly New Zealand Sauvignon, particularly in business class. In fact, Sauvignon did very well in business class white this year, but it's sort of not important enough for first class. So, in fact, all the
not
first,
serious enough.
Yes, so all the first class whites that got medals were Chardonnays,
yeah.
Either from New Wave Australia or from Burgundy.
Yep.
So, you know, that kind of makes sense to me.
But Chardonnay, you get more extraction and you can get tannins from the oak. So it's surprising, whereas something like a New Zealand Savvy has the acidity perhaps, but it certainly has the aromatics.
It has the aromatics, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a little bit of a, I think New Zealand Savvy is a little bit Marmite. Lots of people love it, but there's a significant minority who find it too fruity. And if they're going to drink Sauvignon, they'd rather drink Sancerre.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Pui Fume, you know, which is less fruity and argue maybe a bit sharper. So, you know, it's horses for courses, really. We're looking for quality. And then in the back of our heads, we've got this idea, well, how would this work in the sky? But we're not starting from that premise.
So you're judging the wines as you see it.
Yep.
And then maybe if you're tying between a really oaky tannic wine versus a more fruity one, what would you do then?
Well, you might say, maybe even before you get to that discussion, you might have a wine, and no, actually probably would be when we discuss. So you might have a wine that maybe one pair have pulled forward and they really like it. And then someone might go, it's pretty tannic. And so maybe it's not about rejecting it, but maybe, you know, you just might mark it down a bit. Not because you don't like it, but because you think the tannins will stand out in the air.
Yeah, okay. There was some testing done in a, what do they call it, hyperbaric chamber. Were you involved in that?
No, it was before my time. I've been doing it a long time, but it's before my time. I gather that the judges didn't enjoy the experience, because actually I've always thought it'd be great to do it, to try and replicate some of that experience.
But so hyperbaric chamber, you can lower the pressure, yeah, and change
and adjust the humidity, yeah,
so that you've got in-flight conditions.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I know that every now and again people will do, you'll hear of people doing a wine tasting, you know, mid-ocean on a long-haul flight. And great that people do it, but we haven't done it.
Yeah. I think you'd probably find you can get the judges to go off to some Caribbean island, you know.
Yeah, that'd be tough.
But halfway through, on the way there, you just got to taste these 20 wines.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that'd be a tough day. Yeah.
Okay. There was a company that does a little bit of testing in hyperbaric chambers. What were they? They were the
Fraunhofer Institute.
Yeah, from Bavaria. And they do a little bit of that for some of the for the airlines.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a good idea? Or?
Yeah. I mean, for example, with food, I know they do some food testing as well. For example, we know that airline food is saltier, because if it's not saltier, people think it has no taste. So salt, yeah, affects your perception of flavor. So if you tasted airline food on the ground, probably lots of people would find it maybe too salty.
Yeah.
So I think that's quite interesting, and it's good to do that. It's like ice cream, you know, ice cream is really sweet, but because it's frozen, you don't taste the sweetness so much. Yeah. So if you take ice cream and you defrost it, mm-hmm, it tastes really sweet, yeah, at, yeah, room temperature.
Yeah. I always think that's because the coldness gives you the perception of acidity. You know, when things are really, yeah, acidic, and then the acidity hides the sweetness.
And maybe also slightly numbs your taste buds, yeah, as well, I suspect.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't really fully understand taste. You know, the taste is much more complicated than, you know, we know bits and pieces, but putting it all together, I think, is still lots and lots of work to be done.
You mentioned it at the very beginning about the aircraft noise.
Yeah.
I interviewed Professor Charles Spence, and he's done a lot of work on looking at how noise changes your perception of taste and all this, yes, sort of stuff. So even if you're in a hyperbaric chamber, if you've got this thrumming of the 747 engines,
yep,
who knows how that's going to,
yeah,
change.
I mean, the experiment he did, which I really like, is the one with the crisps.
Yes.
So they had people with a jawbone microphone and a headset, and they adjusted the pitch while they were chewing. And a higher pitch made people think the crisps were fresher, and a lower pitch made them think they were stale, yep, even though they were the same crisps.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it's when you think about it, it's not that surprising. But I kind of like the fact that it's not as straightforward as we think it is.
Yeah.
You know, and you can change flavor perception with color. So give people a glass of red wine. In a room with white light, white walls, taste it. Yeah, that's fine. Change the light, sort of a color wash to green, taste the wine again, tastes worse.
Yeah.
Change the color to red, tastes better. Now, if you think about how many restaurants do you go into where there's a lot of red, maybe red fabrics on the chairs or banquettes and things like that. Red's a color that somehow, I don't even know if we understand, but somehow red seems to make things taste better.
Mm. Yeah, no, it is sort of a bit confusing, isn't it? It's a bit tough. What sort of wines or results this year surprised you?
I guess maybe it was, there were these sort of almost clean sweeps. So first class white was all Chardonnays. Business class red was all Syrah or Shiraz. I just thought maybe we'd have a bit more variety, but on the day, that's what came out. First class red, I think there were at least two Bordeaux's, which did surprise me, because Bordeaux generally doesn't perform that well in this competition, as for reason we've discussed earlier. Champagne's an interesting one.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it champagne or is it sparkling wine? Because everybody into champagne.
In first, it is all champagne. In, yeah, business occasion, you'll have something else. But even if you look at some of the national airlines like Qantas, Air New Zealand, Land Chile, although Air New Zealand didn't enter this year, but those three in particular have always showcased their country's wines. It's sort of part of their offer. And if you look at the Qantas list, which is very good, they always have a champagne from France on the list and everything else. Maybe they might have a port, but I mean, they could well have a fortified Australian one. So the exception they make is for champagne.
Yeah.
And I guess at that level, but I think there's no reason why in business class, maybe if you can find a high quality, you know, bottle fermented sparkling wine, why people wouldn't
British Airways should be able to get access to some pretty good English stuff as well.
Yeah, exactly. So. Exactly.
I noticed at the awards, like some airlines all had the same fizz.
Yes.
There was one that I think every that
four. Did four. Four airlines submitted. Yeah. Well, Dom Perignon often gets submitted by several airlines. Krug does. Tattinger, Comte de Champagne, which won this year, which has won not every year, but it's won several times in the last few years. So yes, it's interesting. And again, I make a point of not trying to identify. You kind of know those things are going to be there in the lineup. Mm. And I actually try really hard not to think, oh, that's the Krug style or that's the Tattinger style. I just say, well, it's tasting good.
Do you taste the wine five times, or do they just give you one and that's
we have a bottle. All the bottles are bagged with a cable tie, so we can't peek. Not that we would.
But. No, but if five airlines have submitted the same wine?
No, if it's the same vintage, which in first it's likely with those prestige cuvées, it's likely to be, then they'll put one bottle in.
Okay.
And maybe that's a perk for the star.
Yeah, exactly. Before we go, just one question. You only did first in business class.
Yep.
But in cattle class, where I normally sit,
yeah.
I used to travel business class, but my company paid for it, but not anymore.
Yeah.
They often give miniatures. They'll just give you. Do you think, in first in business class, I presume it's a full bottle.
It is
serve.
Bottles, yep.
Do you think the miniature makes any difference?
No, I think there's no reason why your little PET bottles can't have. I don't think they compromise the quality. I think the problem is the wine is more likely to be treated like a commodity in cattle class.
Yeah.
I know some airlines do make an effort, but I think these days, you know, they're under a lot of pressure on price. And so I think qualities can be okay, but I think sometimes maybe not so exciting. I sort of wonder if it's probably complicated lives, but I would have thought maybe given that we're getting used to paying for everything on a plane these days, you know, maybe they could have an offer of a better wine still in a miniature bottle and get people to pay for it. I think if you're going to pay, you know, £5 for a little bottle, then maybe £6 or £7 for something better, you know, why not?
Yeah. Okay then. All right then, Peter, I think we'll wrap it up there.
Great.
Cheers very much.
Fantastic.
Cheers, bud.